All right, so we are going to be in Proverbs chapter 15, verse 19. When I was casting about, my mind latched onto this verse. Our verse is, "The way of the slothful man," you notice there the man is in italics, and so is. These are supplied to make it more understandable in English. It wouldn't sound right if you didn't supply them. "But the way of the slothful man is as an hedge of thorns, but the way of the righteous is made plain." The word translated slothful here, we don't really use slothful that much. Those familiar with having a religious background or read old books, they might know slothful. But most of us, when we think of sloth, we think of, hey Seth, can you pull up that picture for me? The new one, the one I asked you to. We think of this guy. This is the three-toed sloth, a arboreal animal, mammal, lives in trees. Very slow. The word translated slothful here, and the English word slothful or sloth, both have as their base meaning the idea of being slow. But they both came to be applied to being lazy. But they have as their base meaning slow. That's why this animal was named the sloth. He's very slow in all aspects, even his biology. I was reading up on the sloth because as a side thing, I became intrigued. And I was reading that they eat very tough vegetation, and one meal can take 2 weeks to digest. And so they said that their lack of movement lends itself to conservation of energy. They have a multi-compartment stomach that's able to break down plant matter that ours couldn't. But it takes a really long time to do it. So they just sit and don't move for long periods of time. In fact, if you look on the internet, you can find pictures of these guys where they're green because they're algae's growing on them. That's how little they move. So, all right, so the way of the slothful man is an hedge of thorns, but the way of the righteous is made plain. I wanted to address this word righteous. This is not the word referring to the normal word translated righteous. The normal word translated righteous is tzaddik. And that is the word where in Habakkuk it says that the just shall live by his faith. That's the word, right, you know, tzaddik. And that is often the word translated righteous. This word is not that word. This word means correct or upright. So it's not that idea of, you know, like just or righteous in that moral sense, but correct, upright. Throughout Proverbs, I wanted to skipping a point in my mind. This word translated slothful only occurs in Proverbs. It occurs a lot of times, but only in Proverbs. And when I looked up the definition, it translated it. It said sluggard. I was like, well, that's not exactly very illuminating. And so I wanted to get, how does the Bible talk about this? And I do that a lot. I will look up lexical entries as to what the word means, but then I want to find out, how does the Bible use it? Because like when you study love as the Bible uses it, quite different than how people normally use it. And so I wanted to see how the Bible uses it. So I was surprised when I saw that only Proverbs discusses this subject. And when I looked up this word translated righteous, I was a little surprised because there's a bunch of occurrences of the word, but it doesn't say what he's like. It just basically says, you know, he pronounces blessing, on the righteous, or it puts the righteous in contrast to the unrighteous. But it doesn't, this word translated righteous, it doesn't get into the characteristics of the righteous. And I remember mentioning that to you, Pastor, and I found that odd. But Pastor said something, I said, that's true. The word, the righteous is being made, is being put in contrast to the slothful. So it's basically, if we understand what the slothful is, we understand what the righteous is. And the slothful is discussed extensively in Proverbs. Now, it says about the slothful, it says that his way, I've brought up before that in Proverbs, in the Hebrew, they use the concept of a road to refer to your life, the path of your life. And so it says that the way, which is the word derek, which is road, the road that the slothful walks, it says, is as an hedge of thorns. And in contrast, it says the way of the righteous is made plain. Interesting about that is, it's actually, it's made high. But that's how innate, that's how you level a road. It's easier, when you have topography going up and down, to make it level, it's easier to build up rather than dig down. Also, if you build up a road, that handles water runoff better. You lower it, and the water runs to the road instead of away from the road. And so our term highway came about. It goes all the way back to the medieval era, the highway does. And that was because they would build up. They'd build up the land to create a road. I found some suitable pictures for the... This is the hedge of, this is the thorny path. That's how I found that. I looked it up by the words thorny path. Imagine, walking down that path. It reminds me, I have no idea why this person did this, but I was once in a house where instead of painting their walls, they took spackle and mixed it with dried oats and spread it on their walls. When it dried, it created this extremely abrasive surface. And I actually scraped up my arm on their wall. I passed too close to the wall and my arms. And I was like, why would you do that? I think he said it was to keep the children from touching the walls. I was like, that just seems a little cruel. What the Romans did was they just painted the lower half of the wall dark. If you ever see from Pompeii, they discovered that almost every house, the lower half of the wall was painted dark, and it was to keep handprints from being visible. The second picture is a Roman road that still exists. Those Romans were really good builders. And if you can see from there, you can see that on either side of the road, it kind of drops away. Because this is a Roman highway. And they knew how to build. I mean, we're getting 2,000 years later, and the road is still there. I mean, Indiana roads don't look this good after 1 year. When I first moved to Indiana, my first spring, I was going down County Line Road. And I was like, what? Someone was in the car with me. I was like, what in the world happened? It looks like somebody bombed the road. There are all these potholes. And they're like, oh yeah, that's spring in Indiana. I grew up in Los Angeles. The roads don't do that every year. I wondered about it, so I did some research into it, and I found out that what happens is you get water under the road. It freezes, swells, causes the surface of the road to crack. And then when it melts, the water flows away, and then the road drops down into the hole. So it makes sense, but the Romans apparently figured out how to get around that. They still have bridges built. The Romans still have bridges that are still usable. I was reading that the Nazis tried to take out one of the Roman bridges in France, and it was so hard, they just gave up. And when I was watching this program about it, they showed cars driving across it. The Romans knew how to build. And so we have this contrast presented for us, that the slothful man, that his path is like going through a hedge of thorns. I don't know if you guys have like really bad thorns in Indiana, like they did in Washington. In Washington, Western Washington at least, it's so wet that everything grows, and it's mild temperatures. Everything just grows in abundance. And one of the problems is that blackberry vines are a real issue. They take over properties everywhere. You have to constantly fight them. And they have really big thorns. And I helped a man clear his property of blackberry vines because the fire marshal said he had to get rid of them or else he'd get a fine. Said it was a fire hazard. And I was so tore up afterwards. Someone looked at me. They said, "You looked like you got attacked by a cat with rabies." They had scratches everywhere. I ruined a whole set of clothes. And that's what this path is like. You know, the Hebrew lends itself to the idea of being enclosed, like you're surrounded by thorns, trying to walk surrounded by thorns. That is the path that the slothful man is walking. But the righteous man, he's walking on a road that's lifted up and made plain, made level. He's not down in the weeds. He's not down in the muck and the mire. His road is lifted up and leveled out by master engineers. So I found myself wanting to, why is this? It just says, the slothful man, his road is hard, painful. The righteous man, the man who does things correctly, his path is made level. Okay, but what does that mean? I understand that his path is hard, but what, why? Why is the path of the slothful man hard? So I looked up the word slothful in Proverbs, looked up all the verses and studied them. And what I found was three key characteristics of the slothful and three key consequences of the slothful presented in Proverbs. Some of these concepts are presented more than once in Proverbs. I only cited one verse per, but some of these are mentioned more than once. In the characteristics of the slothful, the first characteristic I wanted to point us to is that the slothful engages in excessive rest. Excessive rest. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 9. "How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard?" That's our word slothful. It's just a different translation, but it's the same Hebrew word. "How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep?" Rest is necessary for our health. You get consistently poor sleep, and your body will wear itself out. I didn't know this until I got my breathing machine. And I noticed some biological changes that suddenly happened. And my doctor was explaining to me that when you actually go into full sleep, your body slows down. It almost shuts its operations down. And I was experiencing some things that seemed strangely, were occurring a lot. And while I was sleeping, and he said, "Well, that's basically your body never actually went to sleep fully. That's what was happening." He said, "Your body was operating like you were still awake." Just getting little short cat naps. And sleep is necessary to the function of your body. It is the time that your body uses to repair itself from the wear and tear of the day. Goes through it. It's a, you know, like computers go through a disk cleanup process. Well, so does your brain. You know, when you're asleep, your brain goes through all your sensory data that you'd been receiving throughout the day, and it starts organizing things, filing things away. Do I need to keep this? You know, is this necessary? You know? And without proper sleep, you can't properly function. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about excessive rest. This is the point where, you know, in one of the other Proverbs, it had talked about the stages of sleep, you know, increasingly less restful because you keep trying to sleep past the point that you ought to. I seem to naturally sleep about 6 hours a night. That seems to be what I do. Even with this machine, that's all about. I don't seem to ever sleep longer than that. But there are people who need more. I think that I was reading that doctors say that adults, there's a range of hours of sleep that adults require, and the mid is about 8 hours, the short end is 6, and the long end is 10. But there seems to be within that a variation among adults as to what is needed. I'm more on the short end. It just may be a lifetime of conditioning of having to get up early every morning, I don't know. But the reason I'm bringing this up about the variance as to what's needed is I'm not saying that one formula fits all. I'm not going to say, hey, if you've slept 6 hours, get yourself out of bed. But what I'm saying is pay attention. Pay attention to your body's needs. And when you have had sufficient rest, get up. Yeah. Your bed is not a place that God intended for you to stay in. The slothful person, I found when I was telling Pastor that when I was looking at these characteristics, that the word that popped into my mind is the word inertia. Not the scientific use of the word inertia, but the general use of the word inertia, which means the tendency to do nothing. That all of these characteristics show a problem in getting started. Not the stopping once started, but getting started. And this is the person who's in bed, like, I don't want to get out of bed. I really like this. I'm comfy. I'm warm. I'm just going to close my eyes, try to go back to sleep. So, excessive rest. There's necessary rest. As the president of my seminary said, young men, rest time is not wasted time. There's necessary rest. We're talking about excessive rest, above what your body needs. The second characteristic of slothfulness is self-excusing. I say it this way, The slothful is excusing themselves from doing the things that they're supposed to do. And I said it specifically self-excusing, because if your authority in whatever area says, you know what, why don't you take Monday off? That's not being slothful. That is your authority making that decision. What this is the slothful person excusing themselves from their duty in regards to normal adversity. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 4. The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing. In prior years, prior to mechanization, farming, you could only plow when it was cold. Spring, you were supposed to be planting. Summer, the crops were growing. Harvest, you were gathering in the crops. So there was only one time of year when you could get your plowing done. That was when it was cold. So this is what was to be expected. We're not talking about extraordinary adversity. You know, the Bible discusses the concept of normal adversity and extraordinary adversity. It says in the same chapter in the epistles, it says in the New Testament, it says that each man is to bear his own burden. But then it says in the same context, it says, bear ye one another's burdens. But it's two different words for burden. The first one refers to the idea of that which is assigned to you. It's your burden to bear, like a soldier's pack. But the second one is a word that means a load, a heavy load. So this is something that is normally a two-man or more job to do. And sometimes God allows burdens in our lives, challenges and such, that require help, that they are above and beyond what is normal. But there's a certain amount of normal adversity that we're going to face in this life. You know, the Bible says in Genesis that after the fall of Adam, he says, by the sweat of your brow will you eat your bread. God told Adam, he said, work is going to be hard. You know, something I've said to myself to, you know, as a reminder at times, and I've said to others, there's nothing wrong with going to bed tired because you worked hard. I said, that's an honest tired that you can be satisfied with. In fact, the Bible says that the sleep of a laboring man is sweet. But here the sluggard, there's only one time a year that you can plow, and that's when it's cold. In, you know, especially in pre-mechanized times. That was just, you know, the time you had to do it. So here he is, excusing himself from his duty. I'm not going to plow. It's cold. I don't want to get to the consequences yet, and there's consequences written in that verse, but we're not focusing on that. Then the sluggard is, or the slothful, is self-excusing in regards to possible adversity, the what-ifs. The slothful man saith, there is a lion without, I shall be slain in the streets. So his duty requires him to go out, but he says, there's lions out there. Notice he says without. So he's saying not where he is. He's not saying there's a lion in my home. He's saying there's lions out in the countryside. I could get hurt. There are people who are so afraid of what might happen that they become recluses. I just lost the word. They're, the psychologist, is it agoraphobe? They won't go anywhere because they're afraid of what might happen. So consumed by fear. But here's slothful man. He has no reason to believe this. He just says, hey, look, it's possible some bad thing could happen. I think I should stay in. He's excusing himself from labor, and because of the possibility of the adversity. I'll tell you what, if there's a lion outside your door, take a picture, send it to your boss. I actually worked at a job where that happened. My boss showed me. I was in Washington State. One of our workers, Western Washington, between the ocean and the mountains, is a very narrow strip. So if you drive just an hour or so inland, you're getting into the mountains. And so one of our workers actually lived higher up. You know, I lived on the coast. He lived more up in the mountains. And my boss, he said, "Hey, so-and-so is not coming in." And I said, "Why is that?" He says, "The cougar won't move." And he showed me a picture. There was a cougar, a mountain lion, curled up you could see the picture was taken from inside the house. And the guy had taken a picture through his window of his car. And there's a cougar curled on the hood of his car. And he told the boss, he said, "Cougar won't move. I'm not coming in until he does." So if there's actually a lion sleeping on your car, sure, take a picture, send it in. I was like, wow, that is the best excuse for not coming into work I have ever seen. I actually had, I was thinking about a guy who came in to tell the boss that he couldn't work. And nobody doubted him because he came in and he was all tore up. He had bleeding from multiple wounds. And this was also in Washington State. He'd made you have to understand, you go like a short, short distance from the coast inland, and it's just up, 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 up. And in Blaine, Washington, there's this one street called H Street, and there's the H Street Hill. You go in about a mile, and it just starts steeply climbing. He came down H Street Hill on a bicycle. I'll tell you what, I did that once. I never did it again. I got to the bottom of the hill and water was streaming out of my eyes. And I actually passed a car. And there's a stoplight at the bottom of the hill. And I was like, I can't stop. I was like, dear God, keep me alive. Well, this guy, he lost control and he bounced down H Street. And he was all messed up. But he came limping into work. And my boss was like, "Good grief, what happened to you?" He's like, "I didn't want you to think I was, you know, lying." But that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking, once again, about extraordinary adversity. Here, we're not even he's talking about possible adversity. He's worried about what might happen. At least he's using that as his excuse for not doing so. He's self-excusing himself from his duty because he's worried about what might happen. Have you ever considered, a side note, that that's a slap in the face of God? You're saying, in effect, if you're a child of God, you're in effect saying, "God, I can't trust you to do what's best for me." I'm not saying that God won't allow adversity in your life. But as a Christian, we need to believe that if God does allow adversity in our life, it is what is best for us. Thirdly, the characteristic of the slothful is the simple refusal to work. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 5. "The thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness." What? Okay, I apparently put the wrong verse reference. Great. I'm sorry. I must have wrote down the wrong verse reference. That is not it. "But of everyone that is hasty, only to want." This isn't the verse, because what the verse says is it says that the hands of the slothful refuse to work. And I don't remember what verse that is. Oh, okay. 25, that's it. Okay. Yeah, because this has a consequence built in into the verse. So I used it twice. Okay, thank you, Seth. "The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor." You see here, this is kind of a building, a progression. The refusal to get up, the refusal to travel, And finally, the refusal to labor. You know, failure to get up when the man needs to get up, failure to go where he needs to go, and failure to do what he needs to do. And all of it worded in such a way to indicate a start of these things. Now, these are the characteristics of the slothful. Excessive rest, he excuses himself from his duty, and he just refuses to work. The consequences of the slothful. Restlessness. Proverbs chapter 26, verse 14. As the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. That's why the Bible says that the rest of a laboring man is sweet. You go to bed tired, wore out. I one summer helped a friend watch. He had several aunts, and they all had little boys. And they asked him if he would mind one day watching his cousins, his younger cousins, boy cousins, while they went and did something together as sisters. And it was his mom's sisters. There were a group of sisters all lived in the same city. And he said, sure. And he called me. He said, hey, you want to help me watch my cousins? I was like, sure. So we went, and we ran those boys ragged. We played rough with them. We played all kinds of games with them. And it was so funny. When we took them back to, because we took them to the grandparents' house to drop them off in the evening. And it was kind of like, they come stumbling in, hey, Mom, I'm going to bed. They were so tired because we had just been, I remember some of the stuff we did. We were in my friend's room with his little cousins, and one at a time we'd take them and we'd bounce them off the mattress. They loved it, but when we were done with them, they were exhausted. And my friend said, hey, my aunts would like us to watch them again sometime. Because we sent them back tired, you know. Here's the slothful. He's refusing to get out of bed. He reaches the point that his body says, we've had enough rest. And he's like, no, I enjoy laying in bed, so I'm going to stay in bed. And what ends up happening? The next night, when he tries to go to bed, he's not tired. And he tosses and he turns. Now, I tossed and turned previously because I couldn't breathe at night, apparently. Now I sleep a lot better. So there can be other reasons that a person tosses and turns, you know, physical problems. But we're talking about a person that, due to excessive rest, you give yourself to excessive rest more than your body needs, you're not going to sleep well because you're not tired. Secondly, the consequences of the slothful is unfulfilled desires. Proverbs 13, verse 14. Nope. Again, wrong. I don't know what happened. I could have sworn those were the verses. I must not have been careful.
I think that's the earlier verse you had up there that didn't work.
21:5? Was that it?
Huh.
No, that's not it.
That's
25. Yeah, 21:5. Can you look up 21:5?
Sorry, I already deleted it.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I don't know if that was it, but there was the verse intended, and I apologize that I wasn't careful in writing these down. You have to understand, I was getting because I was doing it by searching the word slothful, I had a list of verses, and so I was, you know, looking and then writing down, and I might have grabbed the wrong reference using my computer to look these up. The unfulfilled desires is that it basically says that the slothful desires but has not. Because he doesn't work. It's not this verse. That's the final verse. But because he refuses to labor, refuses to do his duty, he doesn't have the means to get what he wants. I know a man that he often complains about not being able to do or get the things he wants, but at the same time, he's self-described as being lazy, and he has said to me clearly that he isn't going to do something unless they make him do it. That's not it either. Sorry, man. I'm really sorry, guys. I'm sorry. I was 13:4. Proverbs 13:4. Let me see. He can probably pull it up faster than I can. I am so sorry, guys. Oh, it is 13:4. So these must be typos. Because that's two times now that it was the wrong verse because it was either missing a number or, in this case, supplied a number. Thank you. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. And then finally, self-destruction. Proverbs 21:25. There. The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. Now, once again, I want you to see that as the first three characteristics were progressive in their nature, so are the consequences. Restlessness, unfulfilled desires, and then finally self-destruction. Now, you might say, I know some lazy people, and this doesn't seem to be absolutely true of them. So, but what I raise is not that this is only sometimes true or unreliable, but that the person is not always acting slothfully. Sometimes the pressures of life will move a person, self-interest will move a person to at least for a time cast off their slothfulness and engage in labor and industry in order to survive. But if you follow this consistently, if you act like the slothful person consistently in your life, it will follow a progression that will destroy you. This path of thorns that the slothful man is walking, this isn't God's judgment that he has inflicted on the slothful man. This isn't God spanking him for his bad behavior. This is what the slothful man has done to himself. And God, in his mercy, is constantly trying to reach out to him and awaken in him an understanding that he is going down a self-destructive path. The slothful man thinks that if I avoid labor, it will make my life easier, smoother. But what the Bible teaches us is if we do things the correct way, that is how we make our path smoother. You know? If we walk on the highway, we avoid the thorns. We avoid the snares. We avoid the muck and the mire and the stones. In Washington, it rains so much that on the sides of every road are ditches. On both sides. Because there's just so much water all the time. You have to have somewhere to for the water to go. And those ditches, you know, they line them, you know, they're made with stones. And then they grow blackberries because blackberry vines grow everywhere. And one day I got off the edge of the road and I fell down into one of those ditches. And so not only did I have the pain and suffering of falling on those stones, but I also got scraped up and snagged by the blackberry vines. If I was up on the road, the highway, it would have protected me from all that. I've tried to go in. I remember one time thinking that I was going to save myself some trouble going cross country instead of following a meandering road. Not in my car, I mean on foot, and ended up causing myself all kinds of grief. God here in love is telling the person, sin is lying to you. It is telling you by giving in to your sinful urges that you're going to make things easier on yourself. When in fact, you're hurting yourself. You're pulling down the walls of your own house. God isn't telling the slothful man, you know, calling on him, when will you arise? When will you, you know, get up from sleep? Not out of cruelty, wanting to deny him rest, but knowing that there are natural consequences to giving in to sin. Sin is always self-destructive. It is morally wrong for us to try to avoid work. Think about the creation account. Before ever sin entered the picture, God had made a perfect world. No sin, no death, no suffering. You often see these pictures of what the afterlife is going to be. You know, old cartoons I've seen where you see the person sitting on a cloud strumming a harp, just relaxing. And that's the idea of the afterlife. I don't think it's going to be like that. You know why? Because when God made a perfect world and he made Adam, he gave him a job. He put him in the garden and told him to tend it. So the job would have been easier than that same job would be now, because everything got harder after sin. But it was still labor. Work, labor, and work were a part of creation. It was the way God designed it. And our God knows what's best. Our God is a God of love. So he put work into the world because he knows that's what's best for you. Have you ever considered that by your labor, you get to take part in God's provision for the world? I like to think, whenever I have a job, I like to think about how my job is helping other people. I knew a guy, he kind of looked down on his own job because he was a man who was responsible for keeping facilities clean, and that included the bathrooms. And I said, sir, I am thankful for you. I said, I don't want to live in a world where nothing ever gets cleaned up. I love to read history. I read about the Black Plague. No, thank you. I like the fact that all four of my children are still alive. Did you know that prior to modern medicine, only half of the children would make it to adulthood? I had a very it struck me as very sorrowful. I had an opportunity to visit a 150-year-old graveyard here in Indiana. Most of the oldest tombstones were tombstones of children. Only half of the children made it to adulthood. Yeah. No, thank you. I am glad there are janitors. I am glad that we follow, you know, modern sanitation and clean up our filth. I'm glad there's somebody who takes on. I'm glad there's garbage men who come and take away the waste. I'm glad of that. I'm glad there are truck drivers. You know how expensive food would be if we didn't have mass transportation? It would be extremely expensive. Not only that, you could only eat what was in season for your local area. And you would be begging God to keep you alive to the end of summer. Not the winter, because you're eating the harvest at that point. Summer was the time of famine in former times, because you're waiting for harvest. And that's why in the Middle Ages, all those people ate really weird things, because they just learned to eat whatever was available. I try to think of, how my job, whatever I'm doing, helps others. Labor allows us to take part in the work of God, loving others and giving to others. You know, God didn't intend for us to use the results of our labor for all self-consumption. What did the Apostle Paul tell the former thief? He says, labor with your hands that you might care for yourself and have to give to others. That was God's intent. Because God has built into the system a return on labor that is greater than what we put into it in normal circumstances. So we get a greater return, and so that we can supply for our needs and distribute to others. We get to take part in the work of God of caring for other people and helping them. That's how we need to think about work. We need to change our attitude about it and think of work as something we have to do. We need to think of work as something that we get to do, and by it, get to take part in the work of God in showing love to others. Work is good for us, and work is good for others. So let's not be the slothful man who's destroying himself, but let's embrace the plan of God that each one of us who's able labor in whatever skills and opportunities God has given you. Let us be diligent and work hard. And you know what? We can build something. Look at those Romans. They built a road that 2,000 years later is still there. You know, they say if you go to in Europe, a lot of the oldest castles, you can actually see pictures of a castle tower where you can see there's a difference between the lower half of the tower and the upper half of the tower. Why? Because that lower half was built by the Romans. And it was so well made that the succeeding centuries, they just built onto it. If you've ever seen pictures of the Roman Colosseum, you see that there's a lot of it's missing. It's because they took it. They took the pieces of the stones because they were such good, well-cut stones. They took them and incorporated them into their buildings. So you could probably find those stones in some of the oldest structures there in Italy. and the surrounding area. God has built in an increase, a natural return on labor, that we can form order out of chaos. We can make things better. But we have to cast off that attitude that work is an evil, that work is a bad thing, that we should, you know, try to avoid it, but embrace it as part of God's plan and work diligently. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for this time together. Thank you for your great love. I pray, Father, you might use your word now to work in each of us and help us, Father, to do all things to your honor and glory. In the name of your Son, just pray these things. Amen.